From the front lines.
It's not going to work, man.
From the tailgates. Representing KGYR and its stakeholders. We are the Forum for the Fans. The Bleed Blue Show. Flying solo, here's your host, Steve.
Yeah, the Forum for the Fans, Bleed Blue Show, Big Blue Roundtable. We're going to talk some offense, new offensive coordinator. A lot of things going on in the world, so we're going to try to take y'all minds off of things. Bleed Blue Show, BleedBlueShow.com is our website, audio archive, episodes, iTunes, Podcast Republic, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify for the millennials, man. We're going to talk some Jason Garrett, man. It's been fun this last couple of weeks getting a grasp of what Giant fans think on the new offensive coordinator, Jason Garrett. We all know pretty much his brief history, a lot of it with the Cowboys as a free agent from Princeton, played in that Thanksgiving game 1 year and had a big day on Thanksgiving. But as an offensive coordinator, and if you want to kind of implement his years as a head coach, that's probably going to be what we're going to say tonight. So let's have that discussion, man, on as far as how can he make this team better? That's the ultimate question. How will he make Daniel Jones better? That's kind of where we are when it comes to Jason Garrett. That's pretty much the synopsis, man. I think, the 2 weeks ago when we had the episode with Patrick Graham, I thought that was a fantastic episode with Lit, Carl Big Blue Chicago, Benny, shout out to Benny. We had a good dialogue, man. Many dogs on that episode. But the offense, this is really interesting because this is where we want to get some return on our draft capital. Pretty much Daniel Jones and, of course, you know, Saquon Barkley helping to make him better. But nonetheless, man, let's talk, man. Let's talk some football. And then we'll go from there. Let's see. I'm not exactly sure if this is Carl or Chris, either or. What's going on, man? What's up, Carl, Chris? Who's this? Which one?
This is Carl. Look, Steve, good to talk to you. It's been a weird, tough, strange week for everyone. So I hope everybody's doing okay.
Yeah, man. I hope you're safe too, man. How's everything? Everything's all right with you, though?
Yeah, everything is fine. You know, you sometimes you want to just get out there and be with the people as well during all this. But there's also another part of you that tells you that you may want to just stay in just in case, just to be on the safe side. And so I've taken the second option for the time being. But I appreciate everybody out there fighting a good fight.
All right, cool. Shout outs to Carl, Big Blue Chicago, BigBlueChicago.com. Kristen, what's going on? I'm going to talk with the Clapper tonight, man. Get your opinion on that. What up, Kristen? How you doing?
Hi, everybody. I hope everybody's safe.
How's everything with you?
Everything's good here. I can't complain. There's, you know, it's like Carl said, everything is, it's just a bad time. It couldn't be worse. There's a civil war and now a pandemic. So, yeah, it's a little uneasy, but I'm glad everybody's okay.
Right. All right, cool. We'll get into it, man. 2 weeks ago, we tackled Patrick Graham in the defense. And I thought that was a very interesting dialogue because you had, you know, the Big Blue fans on that episode weigh in as far as positive stuff, as far as the optimism, and then there's questions. And I'm pretty sure it's going to be the same thing on Jason Garrett because the last time he was a coordinator, I mean, hard to believe, but it was almost 10 years ago. I mean, we've seen him as a head coach mostly this past decade with the Cowboys. He's had a lot of I'm trying to look at it from more of an offensive coordinator perspective, but you can't not ignore the fact that he was pretty much the head coach the last 10 years with a division rival in the Giants. So if you look at his offensive coordinator, pretty much his record, going back to like the year we beat them in the playoffs in the divisional round in Dallas. Remember, that's the year we went on and win the Super Bowl. Those road games, we went to Tampa, then we went to Dallas that very next week, and we won that game. in Irvin, the last game in Texas Stadium. So he was 13-3 that year. Then the very next year, they went two games over 500. He was really a hot button head coach, meaning a lot of teams wanted him. I remember the Dolphins, the Ravens. I mean, there's a whole bunch of teams that wanted him as head coach because he had the one of the top offices with the Cowboys. Carl, I'll lead off with you because I wanted to see we can start broad level. I do want to do me personally when it gets to my turn. I do want to do a lot of compare and contrast of him as an offensive coordinator, what he had to work with in Dallas, particularly as an offensive coordinator those years between, I say, I don't know, 07, 08-ish to like 2010. There's probably going to be a lot of comparisons as far as Daniel Jones to Tony Romo for me. But, Carl, top level, we can start with you, and then we'll go to Kristen, and then I'll weigh in more as we get deep into it. Your thoughts, Carl, as far as Jason Garrett as the offensive coordinator for the Giants?
You know, it's when you think back on the Cowboys' offense during the time that Garrett was the coach, there was not many times when you looked at them and, you know, they were of fear. You know what I mean? There was a lot of, I mean, the Cowboys were a good team. They had a lot of good players, and thus the good players simply just played to their potential and they were successful. You go back to, I think when Garrett was a coordinator, I believe going back to even as early, I think it was 2006. I think 2006 might've been the year. I'll have to take a look at that in a quick second, but you know, his offense and the way that his teams have performed have usually had a couple of factors: big offensive line, X wide receiver, a high quality tight end, efficient quarterback, and then on two occasions they've had a running back that basically carried the mail about 300 times. So if you just look at it from that angle, he's had Terrell Owens, Jason Witten, then followed by Dez Bryant with Witten. That was then followed by Amari Cooper and the tight end that they got, really good tight end, Blake Jarwin, that he played last year, and then is really emerging as a quality tight end. So they've had a number of factors in addition to Romo, followed by Dak Prescott. So he's had some level of consistency with particular players that fit what he is trying to do. So now as he comes here, and you look at, okay, well what's going to be replicated here that he had basically for the last, you know, 12, 13 years. Does he have the quarterback? Well, we don't know that yet. Does he have the running back? You would think he does, but the question that he's going to have to find him asking himself is, okay, is this particular running back the type that I can give the ball 350 times to over the course of a season? He basically did that with DeMarco Murray. They've given Elliott the ball as many times as they can. And now suddenly, if you start looking at the numbers a little bit more in depth, the diminishing returns are slowly beginning to show up on that. So is he going to basically do the exact same thing with Barkley in terms of how he wants to have this offense? Does he even have the offensive line to run the type of offense that he even wants? We don't know any of those answers yet, and we're not really going to know until, you know, some of these games are played. But philosophically, you just kind of just plug and play. Look at what he had before. Look at what he's dealing with now and see if you can make some level of parallel between those two. Once you do that, then you say, okay, well, how successful is he going to be if he doesn't have those same elements at hand? That would be the one thing that I would wonder about going into the season, independent of any offensive decisions that he would choose to make on a game-by-game basis.
All right. That's a good way to start off the episode. Shout out to Carl, Big Blue Chicago, BigBlueChicago.com. Kristen, let's get your thoughts. Top level thoughts on Jason Garrett as the offensive coordinator.
I don't know. Well, we'd have to give it a shot. He's not bad as an offensive coordinator. As a head coach, yeah, no, thank God. But we'll have to wait and see. He's not my favorite. You know, he does have ties to the Giants. His father has and things like that. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't really have a choice in the matter. It is what it is. He's here. So we just got to give him a chance. As an offensive coordinator, yes. But, as a head coach, no. He tried in Dallas. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just the Jerry Jones curse or whatever it is, but I don't know. It just, I'm not particularly fond of the guy. Just it's like kind of like an enemy thing with me. But he's got a lot to prove. So we'll see if his heart is really in it and if he can back up Judge and you know, they both have ties with Saban, so that's a plus. I don't know. We just, like I said, we have to wait and see and see how he does as the offensive coordinator. They obviously see something in him that's going to work, hopefully, and Judge believes in him. So we got nothing else to lose at this point, I guess. So I'm willing to try it.
Okay. Very good point, both of you.
Can I follow up on
Go ahead. Can I follow up on
something that Kristen mentioned just now? And I think that might be something that should be worth watching. You know, since Garrett's been a head coach basically the last 10 years, you know, I think something to be watching out for is whether or not he takes this particular job and thinks that he can simply just play the role of head coach while he's the offensive coordinator, as opposed to just being the offensive coordinator, if you kind of know what I mean. But that he may try to overstep his authority. He may have to get reined in, but because he's been in such a role for so many years, that the idea that he's just going to somehow just slump right back into the corner of the room and just be an offensive guy, I find that very hard to believe, just based on just tenure, just logical thinking that, hey, I've been doing this, and you're, what, 38 years old? I've been around the block for the last 10 years. Like, I think I know what I'm doing, and he might try to overstep. That's the one thing that I would wonder about.
That's a good point. I mean, did we hire did we do that on purpose? Did we, like, switch the roles on purpose so we don't hurt people's feelings? Is that what it was all about to begin with? You know what I mean? That's actually a really good point.
Yeah.
And the man has a lot of experience. Here's Judge that's, you know, his ears are still, the back of his ears are still wet, and this guy's got years of experience. He's got family experience. He was a quarterback. He was, you know, he played the game too, so it's not like, you know, the guy's just on the sidelines either. So, I don't know. I'm with Carl on that. It's just, I'm settling today.
I thought about that. That is a waiting see answer. That's more of a, until we actually see regular season games and we see his actions, as for, or even in practice, whatever. I mean, if you have the updates on practice.
Yeah, you won't see it during the games. It'll be all stuff behind. Yeah, you won't see it during the games. It'll be all stuff that you'll see behind the scenes that will eventually seep to certain players. Well, they'll look at it and say, wait a second, this guy knows what he's doing. And then there will be a belief that this guy is really in charge and not the head coach.
Or gravitate players to more to Garrett than he would Judge just because of experience. And then, you divide certain players. I just don't want the respect for Judge to go away because of Garrett.
Well, I don't know.
I want to see Judge shine. That's all. Like, let's see what he can do on his own. I just hope he's, you know, he talked a good game in the beginning. Press conferences, like everybody said, he said all the right things. So we just hope and pray that this guy's really going to take charge.
I would think he may have a little bit in that in him. I don't think it would be totally on purpose. I think the whole thing, I think in the back of Jason Garrett's mind is to improve the offense of the New York Giants. And I think that's probably the main thing. You may see some of the, overstepping his boundaries, more of a head coach role. I mean, Carl, you're absolutely correct. I mean, think about it. It's just it's natural. You've been in pretty much a CEO position, and now you're kind of delegated to more of a manager or a vice president or whatever. It ain't the same. You're so used to that same role over the last 10 years. We've seen that happen with former coordinators who went to head coach, and then they went back to – like Wade Phillips comes to mind. And Wade Phillips actually – was quite successful as a defensive coordinator, went to head coach. Remember, Jason Garrett replaced Wade Phillips. and then ended up going back to a coordinator position and then winning a championship as a coordinator position, at the coordinator position. But that, I mean, Wade Phillips is not Jason Garrett, but I'm just saying the scenario as far as going from coordinator, head coach, coordinator. So, but as far as Jason Garrett, I would not be surprised.
Yeah,
I would not be surprised.
Yeah, I mean, a guy like Wade, you know, he was coaching the Cowboys, I think, for 4 years before he got – or 3.5 years before he got fired. And then I think, you know, in his previous stints have been really, you know, pretty small. We're talking, you know, 2-3-4 year periods. This guy has been the head coach for the last 10, you know, basically since the middle of 2010, the last 9.5 years with moderate success. Like, this is not some guy that just was, you know, a coach for a couple of years and was a bit of a bum, you know, gets kicked out and, you know, relegates himself basically to, you know, an offensive coordinator. Like, this dude, you know, has some level of credentials that he can speak of, you know? And so that's just, you know, to your point that, you know, the comparison you made, you know, even in the real world, if you're a manager for 5 years and then all of a sudden, you know, you're like somebody's assistant and you're looking at the manager that you're working for and you watch him day to day and you're like, I know more than this dude.
Yeah, I mean, I thought about that when we made the hire. So, to your point, Carl, as far as DeMarco Murray, Ezekiel Elliott, I get it. Now, I was looking at it as far as more of an offensive coordinator, but I can't totally dismiss your valid points, both Carl and Kristen, as far as that tenure of a head coach. I mean, you can't ignore it. It's just like the elephant in the room. Like, hey, man, you've been a head coach. You may have overstepped your boundaries over a rookie head coach. I would say common sense, but that's just what you're expecting in the real world. So, but anyway, I look at it like this, man. As far as comparing rosters, complimentary, the fact that Mark Colombo is the offensive line coach, and we haven't talked about him yet this summer, and we'll get to that. The fact that he's tied to Jason Garrett on this roster, and he was tied to Jason Garrett when he was offensive coordinator. Because remember, Mark Colombo was the right tackle when they had those pretty good – no, they had that pretty good year. They went 13-3. They were one of the NFC favorites, and the Giants clipped them off. That line, they were right-side heavy. They were right-side heavy. Carl, if we were to compare our line to that line, like, for instance, Flozier Adams, you remember that name, right, versus, like, say, Nate Solder. And then you put, let's say, Leonard Davis versus Kevin Zeitler or Mark Colombo versus whoever you put in, maybe the rookie that we just drafted, or if it's going to be Cameron Fleming, the guy we actually picked up from the Cowboys. I mean, you see a little bit of similarities. Leonard Davis was more of a run guy. Same thing with Mark Colombo, where Mark Colombo is looking at this roster, Carl. How could him and Jason Garrett be on the same page to develop Daniel Jones first and foremost? I know we talk about protective football. I think that's probably the number one concern with Daniel Jones with Giant fans is limit the turnovers. So how do you tie in, let's say, Mark Colombo, Jason Garrett as their coaching role on the Giants compared to how they did in Dallas and how you compare Daniel Jones to, let's say, Tony Romo? Because, you know, Romo was a 36-19 guy. Daniel Jones was a 2-1 ratio guy, what, 24 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. Not too much of a difference under the first year with Romo, like what Jones did under Shermer. But what's your thoughts, Carl? And then we go back to Christian.
Well, in terms of the turnovers that you were talking about, you know, that's almost the number one issue right off the bat. I know the last show that we did, was it the last show? Maybe the last show, the show we did before, where it was made mention about the fact that Jones had only turned the ball over, or he had only fumbled the ball X amount of times, and somehow there was some weird comparison that was made to Carson Wentz about the fact that, well, Wentz turned the ball, you know, he had 18 fumbles or whatever, and Jones had 16 or 14, whatever the number was. Well, the difference is that in the year that Wentz lost all those fumbles, he only lost the ball 3 times to the other team. Jones lost the ball 11 times to the other team. You can't have that, period. That's almost like a non-starter right off the bat. But in terms of the offensive line, I was looking back here right now at the Cowboys' 07 offensive line. They had Pro Bowlers on that team. Flozell Adams, Andre Garrod, and Leonard Davis. So those are the three. And you remember in the first two games that the Giants had against them before the third game when they won the playoffs, you know, the Giants can almost never get any level of pressure on the Cowboys' offense. And that was sort of a theme that particular season. So when we're looking at trying to compare that to now, you know, if the one thing you would probably have to start with and say, okay, well, who is your main offensive line anchor? I don't think we have the answer to that question right now. And that is going to sort of hover over any type of success that the Giants want to have up front. Because right now, if you look at it, is Nate Solder going to be a better player this season than he's been the past two seasons? Question mark. Will Hernandez, will he improve? Like, I don't think Will Hernandez improved at all last season. I think he either stayed right about what he was as a rookie or played worse than I expected. So that's a question mark. The center position, that's still a question mark even right now. That question still hasn't even been figured out. And then Zeitler, steady player. And then Thomas, we don't know because he's a rookie. So I think we almost have to kind of get a feeling of, okay, well, what do we have? And I don't think we have the answers to that just yet. In addition, we don't even have a full complement of offensive linemen at the moment. You know, maybe these rookies will, you know, emerge during training camp, assuming we have one, and then assume those particular roles on this team. You almost have to hope that that's the case. So I think right now it's almost like a work in progress where we're just going to have to learn as we go along here. And I think the Giants coaching staff, Colombo that you mentioned, and the coaching, will just have to sort of figure it out and hope guys emerge over a period of time and just cross their fingers.
All right, Kristen, what's your thoughts on that?
I like his grit, you know. I mean, I'm just listening to what he says. And, you know, he wants to be out there working with every single guy on all their weaknesses, and I appreciate that, which is good. He wants to bring that grind back to the game. He's got to get these guys, you know, these are big body guys. Will Hernandez and Gates and Zeitler, these guys are big guys. They've got to utilize their bodies. They've got to learn how to move, and hopefully this guy can, you know, improve on it's got to be an improvement. They have to improve. You know, at this point in the game, there's no excuses. This guy has to improve these guys, especially Nate Solder. I hope he gets it together this season. I don't know what else to say about him, but I just hope Colombo has a plan. You know, he sounds good, just like Judge and everybody else. We're on a wait and see. So, I don't know. We'll see. But like you said, he's got ties to Garrett, and not crazy about it. But it is what it is, and we'll just have to see what he does. Hopefully he tweaks what we need and he figures it out for us.
Right. I'm sort of optimistic on Jason Garrett. I'm not as – with the fan base, what I gather, a lot of fans – I think they look at Jason Garrett because of his tenure as a head coach over the last decade, and it was a lot of 8-8, 500 seasons. That they probably, I guess they forgot, or didn't, or I already said realize, or whatever, however you want to combine it. As of also, with his duties solely as an offensive coordinator, he was relatively, I would say, pretty good, or I wouldn't say successful, but I would say he was pretty damn good. I mean, that one year they were really putting up a lot of points. Now, Carl, we go back and forth like comparing Tony Romo to Jason Garrett, but we don't have Terrell Owens. That version of Terrell Owens that was on that team, we don't have that. So that's one big minus as far as trying to project where the Giants can go. Now, if you want to say Golden Tate is like a good player, he's not Terrell Owens of 2007. I got to be honest. You know, he was a monster. Once he left Philadelphia and went to Dallas for those couple of years, man. And then under Jason Garrett, they thrived in that offense. As offensive coordinator. So that's one thing. And to your point, I want to go back to your point. I wrote that down as far as Jason Witten. Jason Witten was in his, fifth year at that point? He was entering his prime. We don't have a Jason Witten type. Like, we have, like, guys are kind of like Voltron. It's like you have Evan Engram. He's more of a stretch the field seen guy, but he can't block. Or we haven't seen consistent games of him blocking. And then you add in Smith. We haven't really seen much of him or Simonson. We have a bunch of these piecemeal tight ends. We don't have the complete tight end of like what Tony Romo was throwing to Jason Witten all those games. I mean, they were killing us then. He killed us towards the tail end as a tenure as a Cowboy. I say all this to say, I'm just trying to compare and contrast, what is Jason Garrett working with the Giants that he had, you know, he doesn't have, that he didn't have, in, or he did have in Dallas that he doesn't have in the Giants? I think we're really going to find out between both offensive line coach and offensive coordinator coaching these guys up. And, like, to your point, Carl, as far as Ezekiel Elliott, you know, that's more of a tenure when he was head coach, DeMarco Murray. But when he had, like, he didn't really have the system was more kind of run the ball anyway. Remember Julius Jones, Marion Barber, those type of running backs?
I don't
really look at Barkley as that type of running back. Although I see Barkley as the more talented running back. Carl, here's the question I have for you. Do you see Jason Garrett trying to implement Barkley to that downhill DeMarco Murray 300 carry type of running back? That's my question.
I think that's the biggest question that stands right now, because, you know, if that is what the Giants are going to be this season, if they are going to play that role where it's, hey, listen, we're just going to run this dude into the ground, basically, and that would be the way to go. And also factor in, they're going to have to make a decision on whether to pay him at the end of the season, just like these other running backs that are getting paid after 3 years. So there's almost a sort of a double-edged sword there. You run this guy into the ground, and then you pay him, I can almost guarantee you that the next season he will not be as good as – let's say you run him 350 times this season, and he gets, I don't know, 1,800 yards, and you pay him. I can guarantee you right now he will not be as productive the next season. You can almost lock that up. Now, the Giants might do it in a mode to try to win games, but – I would be very concerned about running that risk. You know, the other thing, too, is that, you know, if you just track Barkley's history since college, from the time he was at Penn State, he's never been this high-volume running back in terms of carries. He's never been that. So if they're going to try to do that now, I just think you are setting yourself up to get diminishing returns. Even if you try to do it this season.
All right. Kristen, what's your thoughts?
I agree that it has to be run more, but not to the extent of injury and not to the extent of, you know, just using this guy solely, you know, putting the ball in his hands every time and solely depending on him is not going to do it. It's not. And we have to see how the blocking is for this man anyway. We got to see how that goes. If he has sufficient security and safety around him, I believe he can run all day long. But without that security blanket, I can't do it. I can't trust in it right now. I don't want to overexert this kid and he gets injured. He's been pretty healthy, knock on wood, so far, with the minor stuff that he has had. But, you know, he's a workhorse. He's built to run. That man is a runner. He's going to drag you with him. That's just the way he is. He's like a thoroughbred. He runs right. He's like a Mack truck and a thoroughbred in one. He runs through you, and he's smart. But he's smart. So, I don't know. I want him protected. We have to see if he has protection in the front of him, and we'll see what happens. But I agree with Carl. I don't want to overdo it with him and pay this guy, push him, and then he's gassed out, and that's it. So, yeah, I agree.
But how does that – would that not improve the offense? What's the give and take to improve the offense for the Giants? Isn't that what you want to do? You want to sustain drives, or you want to – for instance, like to Carl's point, but does all that translate into wins or more wins? Could we get another, 2 wins on the schedule with that formula? You think that, Carl? Let me ask you that. From what our record was, you think that will translate to another, I don't know, win, two wins on the schedule to towards improvement? Where do you think that could go if they do that?
Well, the thing I've always had philosophically is that rushing attempts are a byproduct of the score. So if you have a terrible defense like the Giants have already, maybe they'll be better this season, but who knows? You know, if you're down basically in the first half, you know, down 10 points, you know, in that mode going into the second half, right off the bat, your decision to throw the ball has already been made for you because you need to throw the ball to score, unless you've got plans on simply running the ball in hopes that, you know, you're going to get 8, 9, 10 yards a carry. That's almost non-existent these days. So his rushing production is going to be solely based on how good the Giants' defense is. That's what I'm thinking, is that
absolutely.
the Giants will have the ball. If the Giants' defense is halfway decent, just halfway decent, that will give the Giants' offense more chances with the ball as opposed to less. Because what we've seen in the last number of years is that the defense, with all of its awfulness, goes out and they do what they do. And then the Giants' offense goes 3 and out. And then it's sort of like a situation where we look at the end of the game and we look at the carries and we say, well, Barkley ran the ball 14 times for 77 yards. Let's just use that as a number. Now, that averages up to about 5 yards a carry plus. And you say, well, man, if we just gave Barkley the ball more, we'd win, or we would have a better chance of winning. But that's not actually the case, because when the score is 21-9 in the second half, you're throwing the ball. So the game, in a lot of ways, is actually won in the first half. And if unless you're winning that and putting yourself in a position where you can run the ball more because you have the ability to do so, then you can utilize it more. But right now, the last 2 years, as we have seen, you know, Barkley has had, you know, the first year he had, you know, a very, you know, great season. But a lot of times the Giants were not in close games enough to where he can be a deciding factor in whether they won or lost. And
final
so
question.
Go ahead.
Final question. Was the Giants down not – okay, let's put a percentage on it because it was both. But will you say the Giants were down in a lot of these games because the offense were doing a lot of three and outs and the defense was just winded? They didn't catch a lot of breaks? Or is it more so – the defense was just that bad, the offense just had to play catch-up? Meaning, you know, if you look at the time of possessions in a lot of these games, the Giants are usually like -6, -7 on average versus their opponents, meaning offense is not staying on the field as much. So is it? It's a double-edged sword, but where do we place most of that blame? It's a lot of loaded questions in there, but Pat Shurmur versus Jason Garrett, who do you have more confidence in with the personnel they had to work with, Pat Shurmur last year, or do Jason Garrett from what we have not seen, or what you could predict this year? And also, as far as, do you think, what's the percentage you would put on the defense? You know, can't get off the field, and of course the offense just three and out, maybe one first down punting. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's even in terms of Shurmur's with the offense. The last two, you know, Shurmur with the offense in the first year wasn't bad. The issue became is that the offensive line was just god awful. In that first half of the season, when things, you know, slipped away, you know, they almost couldn't do anything. They couldn't run the ball. They couldn't run the ball as much as they would even like to, because they. Well, I remember there were times where Barkley would get the ball and there'd be three dudes right there. So at that point, it just sort of took that away. And then when they would try to throw the ball, whether there'd be either a drop pass, there'd be a procedural penalty. You know, there were a lot of things that, independent of the actual play itself, was things that were happening that were putting the Giants themselves in bad positions. You know, you go, let's say first down, you get 6 yards on first down. Second down and four, you're thinking, okay, we have a chance to open things up here. All of a sudden, you have maybe a 2 yard loss on a running play, or a false start penalty, or a holding penalty. All of a sudden, now it's second down and 12, or second down and 13, and you're right, you know, behind the eight ball. And so that's where, you know, Can better coaching stop penalties? I don't know if that's the case. I think talent stops that. But those kind of things is that, and I'm looking up to see. I'm going to go through my numbers to see what percentage of the time the Giants had the lead last year, because I was tracking that. I've tracked that the last couple of years, and I think the number was like 26% off the top of my head in terms of the times that they were actually leading in a game. Like it's crazy, like the amount that percentage. But there would be two things. One, the defense would play well for a certain period of time, and then right when the offense would just score just to keep the game close, then the defense would give up a touchdown, and all of a sudden you would look at the final score and you'd think, damn, you know, as if they were actually in the game. But in reality, they actually weren't in the game at all. It just the score just looked more aesthetically pleasing. And what was the other question you had?
Yeah, Pat Shurmur versus Garrett. Who do you – like, just – I know it's on the spot, but who do you would have more confidence in? Pat Shurmur with last year's roster or Jason Garrett with this upcoming year's roster, and why? And then we'll go to Kristen.
I would take a quarter, throw it in the air, pick either option. I think until further, I'm not going to be able to give – I put this way, my faith in Jason Garrett right now is a little shaky. I want to see – I didn't watch him with the Cowboys during these years and say, boy, you know, he's really cooking up some really good offense. I don't think that's something a lot of us, when we were watching him, I don't think that's something a lot of us were saying when we were watching the Cowboys the last 10 years. So from that standpoint, if he was some guru, I'd be like, all right, we may be able to cook something up here. But at no point in the last 10 years did I say, boy, Jason Garrett's really coaching these dudes up. But no, I was not on that train.
Okay. All right. Let me say this real quick, and then we'll go to Kristen. I never really looked at the Cowboys over the last 10 years where, like, you know, their offense wasn't, like, off the charts, record-breaking great. I mean, they had a couple good years. It was usually their defense that let them down in most of those 10 years with Garrett. That's kind of how I took it. Go ahead, Kristen. What's your thoughts as far as who would you rather have, or more confident, Shurmur or Garrett? And then, of course, I'll throw this question at you as far as are they going to get Evan Engram implemented? Because his production has gone down, and I think he's been somewhat of a disappointment. A disappointment. Your thoughts?
Mm-hmm. Evan Engram is like two steps behind. That's how I feel on plays. You know, these guys really have to step it up. I don't know how they're going to get Engram to play better. You know, what we see, I think, with Engram is what we get. It's, you know, when he's good, he's decent. But when he's bad, he's terrible. You know, there's no in between with him. It's one or the other. But back to your first question, yes, a lot of it was defense with us last year, and I think offense was trying to catch up. But like I said, it was so disappointing to see these scores by just minuscule points. They were never blowouts. You know, we never got blown out of the water. We really didn't. They were pretty close games that were winnable, but that's a whole nother story. As far as Garrett and Shurmur, oh boy, I don't like either one of these guys, but if I'm going to go with experience and like more in tune with his players, I hate to say this, I swear to God, but I would have to go with Jason Garrett.
I mean, it's kind of funny because we're kind of leaving Mike Shula's name out of the whole mix, but I just never looked at him as an offensive coordinator. He was offensive coordinator by name or by title. It felt like Shurmur was running the show. That's why I asked that question. See, Garrett, if you're just going off of pure, this is what makes this topic really interesting, even more so 2 weeks ago versus Patrick Graham, because he's been so much of in the head coach role, but he had the talent, but it's been 10 years. It's a lot of loaded layers, which makes it fascinating. And that's why some Giant fans are optimistic as far as if you just look, don't put the head coach hat on him. Just look at him as a coordinator.
Right.
And he was successful, mm-hmm. but that was 10 years ago. But, you know, 10 years ago, however you want it, he did that. Because had he not done
well,
then you're like, wow.
Yeah, it was a different
him.
Yeah, it was a different league 14 years ago. Like the way offense is played today and the way offense was played in 2007 is like two different worlds.
Yeah.
Right. I don't disagree with that. I agree with you on that. But it's not like he was offensive coordinator and he sat on the couch for 10 years. I mean, he was literally in the thick of things as a coach, not a coordinator, but as a coach. He was there, but he wasn't there in that particular role. I get you, Carl. I'm with you. That's what makes this topic fascinating. But if I was going to improve Evan Engram, man, I mean, if you could just even get him in the 65 catch range, they have to coach him up the block. That's probably the number one thing probably on Evan Engram, because when you see him in the game and you see him in the slot, you see him along the hash, maybe left, right, tight end. You know, for the most part, these defenses, they scout the Giants. They know the Giants are probably going to throw. Because he's not a threat to block. And his body frame doesn't tell you tight end blocking. He's kind of, we always talked about it since he came out of Ole Miss. He's a tweener. He's a wide receiver playing tight end, in a sense, if you want to put it like that. So if he's going to get we're going to have some success – I think we have to up his production and at least try to get first downs, help him move the chains. I mean, we were all at the game, all three of us. We were at the game in week three, and he had that big breakout play at the start of the third quarter. I thought I was just going to see more of that last season. You know, yards after the catch. He has that in him. I'm not sure if it's because Pat Shurmur didn't implement the game plan towards him like that, or – maybe it was a combination of things as far as, you know, when Barkley got hurt. I'm not trying to make excuses. I'm just trying to go back and see as why it did not work for Evan Engram. What's your thoughts, Carl?
Well, there's the idea that some players are ruined by terrible coaching, because if you even go back to his rookie season, I remember the first like four games of the season, I remember taking a look at some of his, I remember I wanted to just scout him for a four-game period, and I remember looking back at some of the routes that he was running, and he was basically running the exact same routes that Will Tye had run in the season before. Like they had just drafted this highly talented player that could run 4-4, that could, you know, basically get through, you know, secondaries. Remember, he was drafted originally as a quote unquote cover two buster. Remember that whole 2016 year where somehow the cover two like stymied the entire offense, and so they needed to have somebody to go ahead and bust that up. And fortunately, you know, that still didn't end up happening. But, you know, originally the idea in my head was, okay, I have this player. I'm going to use him in about four or five different ways. I'm going to use him as a slot wide receiver because of his speed. I'm going to use him on the outside sometimes. Sometimes I'm going to use him as a tight end that has to block occasionally. Sometimes I might even use him as an H-back. There's like four or five different ways that, you know, you can plan out to make this particular player successful. If you know he can't block, you know, Jimmy Graham has never been the greatest blocker in the world, and the Saints and the Packers have never used him as such. That's just never been what they do. You know, now Graham's on the later side of his career, but when he was with the Saints during his, you know, prime heyday years, you know, you can probably count the amount of times, maybe on a couple of hands and feet, the amount of times he actually stayed in and was a inline tight end blocker. That wasn't him. So I'm not going to force him into that. But what has happened the last 2 years under two different coaches is that this guy, or 3 years, I should say, over two different, with two different head coaches, is that there seems to be almost either a lack of creativity in how to best utilize this particular player, and then the execution of that particular scheme with said player. And then you factor in the injuries because he hasn't been on the field very much, and it's like, damn. Because think about it. For a guy that runs as fast as he ran at the combine, how many times have you seen them throw a pass to him 20 yards down the field?
Right.
Think about that for a second. He has the speed, and yet in 3 years, you could probably count the amount of times he's been thrown the ball more than 15 to 20 yards down the field, maybe on both hands.
Now, I hate to be the Debbie Downer. You got to be 100. I know a lot of the Eli fans are going to kill me when I say this. Eli, as great as he is historically, those last couple of years, as far as getting that ball down the field, wasn't really the accurate of quarterback. I got to put that into the equation. I have to put that into the equation. Now, Daniel Jones has actually shown a little bit of a touch with that. He's missed a couple, but if you look how he's gotten the ball to Slayton down the field, in the Philly game is a prime example, in the Monday night game, or the Packers.
Yeah.
Either or, pick your samples. The whole point of what I'm trying to say is it's really sucks because I don't think Evan Engram, in a sense, had the really opportunities as if in the same senses. I don't remember recall if Evan Engram, if he went down the field and they threw the ball and he fucked it up. It was kind of more so the quarterback didn't get the ball to him for whatever reason, too. I mean, you can put that into the equation. What's your thought, Carl, and then Christian?
Yeah, I mean, he it may have just been a situation where he was just simply just drafted to the wrong team with the wrong quarterback and a set of circumstances that has basically, you know, stymied his career. And it's very possible that he, after the season, goes to another team and has a complete resurgence. There is a very, very high possibility of that. I'm not discounting that because I'm trying to think of another guy that has had sort of a resurgence. Like Eric Ebron is the guy that pops in my head. With the what team does he play for?
That's
the Colts.
A great example.
Where,
that is a great example.
Yeah,
go ahead. Great example.
He was a top 10 pick with the Lions, and
right.
His career never really, you know. I know the Detroit Lions is like the organization where everybody basically goes to die, but you know he leaves, goes to the Colts, and hooks up with Andrew Luck before he retired, and it was as if his his career was just like given a. A shot in the arm. And so that's what I wonder about, is that perhaps it's a situation where maybe he's just, and maybe he finds it this season and things work out where the coaching, the quarterback, all the other factors, make him, the player that a lot of people expected him to be. But the percentages are he's probably going to have to find that somewhere else.
Oh, yeah. Kristen, your thoughts?
That's funny because that's usually how it works. The guys don't do well here or they don't do well on a certain team. They leave and they just blow up and flourish. So we'll see. If he doesn't come around this year with new coaches, whose fault is it? Is it just him or is it the coaching? That's my question.
That's a good
this
question.
Guy's been coached by three. This is going to be his third coach with us. So let's see. I mean, is it the coaching or isn't it?
Four or 5 years and three coaches. Yeah, if he hasn't, and part of it's because he hasn't been able to stay on the field.
Exactly. If this is it for him, I guess this is it. This is what you're producing. So maybe he is better off going somewhere else. I don't know. I hope he does work out. I'd hate to see him leave, of course. But, we'll have to see if it's the coaching or if it's really him. These are all new guys, brand spanking new. So hopefully they get a better perspective and they get some guy back there and says, I think I could really work with you. Let's do this. And pull him aside and really, work him out and see if he can be coached up. If not, it's on him.
Well, if you remember the office, his production, he flourished because a lot of Odell Beckham Jr. had a lot of attention that first year. And you also had Sterling Shepard you had to, work with, So he had those opportunities. I think for him to be successful, man, and it goes back to what we said earlier, if you have a young offensive lineman in Thomas, you're going to have to – his best attribute is running down the field and getting to the second level. So utilize that as a weapon. Zeitler is not necessarily the run mauler at right guard, and plus he's older. He's more of a pass finesse type of guard. I think Louis Hernandez, I don't want to sound like I'm like the Giants optimistic. He's got to be coached up by Mark Colombo, and I think he has that mean streak in him, and he's just got to cut down on penalties. So you have one guy at left guard. You have one guy at right tackle. As long as they stay healthy and they could not draw penalties, I mean, you could have an offense. You could get three, four yards a chunk instead of play action, and that's where a guy like Evan Engram could flourish. I think that would be somewhat towards the formula, or, you know, get the ball to Slayton or Tate, as long as these guys are available and healthy, not suspended, stuff like that. So I say all that to say is they have a lot of work to do, and it starts with the ball security of Daniel Jones. That's first and foremost. You get that out of the way. You work on that, and I think that's could be. I think that's fixable and that's coachable. Next thing is run the rock with our young offensive linemen. Even if you want to throw in Shea Lemieux and as a backup and whatever reps he could get through this virtual workout stuff, whatever. Louis Hernandez and especially Andrew Thomas, as far as the future of the offensive line for the Giants, Hernandez has been there, he's going into his third year. You're going to have to run the rock. This, what really worries me, to Carl's point, and they had all pro centers. And when you have an anchor in the middle of your offensive line, it makes things a lot easier. When you have guys like Kelsey for the Eagles, and you got guys like, you know, Gorode and Frederick right behind them when they drafted them, I mean, it makes the transition easy. Carl, I don't even think that gets looked at enough. The center to quarterback relationship, to know what's coming, the blitz calls and all that, Carl. As far as Dallas has been very fortunate to have that situation work out for the most part, even though it didn't translate to like big, you know, conference championship wins. But as far as, you know, regular season somewhat success, I mean, they've been they've been okay, because I think that center to quarterback, whether it's Tony Romo or Dak Prescott, that has worked out for them. I think that's one thing that Colombo and Garrett is going to realize, that Spencer Pulley is not those all-pro centers that Cowboys had the last 10 years. Carl, let's get some final thoughts from you. Anything else you'd like to say, man? Your final thoughts, and then, of course, Kristen. And then we'll wrap up.
Yeah, you know, to close out this show in this tough time, you know, you look at how this offense can perform this season. You know, we've mentioned there's a lot of what ifs, and I think as we get ready here, because we got about another 2 months, less than 8 weeks before we believe that stuff is going to get started. You know, we all want to be optimistic, and I think that's the only option we've got, because God knows the alternative is absolutely terrible. You know, we want to see growth really from the first day. I think the idea of the work in progress, I don't think that in my head, I don't think that's going to fly with the fans this season. The fans know that they have a second year quarterback who they believe that's good. They have an a top running back on this team. They have quality wide receivers for the most part. They have a tight end that they perceive to be a good player, and they've made some improvements on the offensive line. This should not be a team that when the season is over, whenever that is, that we say, boy, this offense, quote-unquote, underperformed or finished, you know, in the bottom half of the league. I think at bare minimum, average should be the ceiling, and then after that, whether they become good, you know, a I don't know about top, you know, top 10 offense, but between 11 and 16 should be the bare minimum for what we get from this offense this season. And if not, then something has gone wrong again.
Yeah, we're going to have to really dive into this more, because it's a lot of layers that we left off the table, because between Carl and Chris and myself, we can't get to everything. I mean, I think we've just scratched the surface on this. But Carl, man, thank you very much. Anything else you'd like to say before we go to Kristen? Or you had any questions for Kristen or comments for Kristen?
No. I love you all. I'll defer. I will. What's the word? I will give my time up. Whatever that term is. I'm giving my time to Kristen.
All right, man. Shout out to Carl, man. BigBlueChicago.com, man. Kristen, your final thought.
I was just thinking of something, and I just lost my train of thought. But I agree with what Carl said. Everything that he said, he's exactly right. There's no excuses here. There's absolutely no excuse. We already know that he's trash, okay? We have to be better than we were last year. Schedule is not that bad. The schedule is not going to be that bad. The East is not that fantastic. So, on that note, we have the problem, the people that we have, honestly. It's an improvement from last year. We still Jones. We have to protect the quarterback. The defense has to tighten up. And everybody's got to be on the same page. That's it. So, Bleed Blue, guys, thanks for having me on.
All right, Bleed Blue, we'll be back in 2 weeks. I think we'll tackle both defense and offense, and shout out to Kristen, in 2 weeks. We'll look at both sides and see where we are with the virtual workouts for the squad. We'll be back in 2 Thursdays from now. We'll call Big Blue Chicago, BigBlueChicago.com. Of course, Kristen, everybody be safe. And remember, we're going through some dire times, man, in this country, man. And sometimes if things get a little mentally overwhelming, sometimes just take a step and fall back, man. Don't allow, you know, everything that's happening to affect your mental state, because I know a lot of people deal with mental health, and that's a very passionate topic of mine, because I know people don't talk about it enough. So my whole thing and my whole, I guess you could say, not advice, but more so word, and sometimes you just got to turn off the TV. Sometimes you just got to take a step back. But the whole important thing is everybody be safe, and everybody, we just hope that everybody, I pray that everybody gets through these dire times as best as we can, man, as one big nation, one big world, man. Sangre Azul, ladies and gentlemen. Bleed Blue.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Bleed Blue, 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 bleed blue.